sometimes you gotta hate technology. Screwed up the great Walker Brothers there. Just for a second or two. The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore by the Walker Brothers, with the incredible voice of, yes, Scott Walker there, lead vocalist. Reinhold Friedel before that with Pan Fried 11, or maybe it's 2, I gotta check that, from Mutanza, Reinhold Friedel. Before that, Henning Christensen from Dust Out of Brain. It's a oddball CD on Weddell Museum of Art in, I guess, Denmark. I gotta do more research on that one too. I'm really like not too together here at the end of the show. Henning Christensen, a great Fluxus artist from Denmark. An excerpt of Dust Out of Brain and Akpatok with Eyes Free of Dust from Two Winters, Two Springs. That's it for me. This is Freeform Radio, WFMU, East Orange, WMFU, Mount Hope, in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. I'll see you next week. Stay tuned for Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Fabio, and thanks for listening. Bye.
To Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. Oh, I'm faking. I didn't cut off the beginning. I went too long, and so I've got to make the beginning shorter, so I faked that. But this is Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we're going to learn how to sell things in my instructional tape of how to be a salesman. Enjoy. Hello, friends, and welcome to Hardy White's How to Sell Things. If you're listening to this tape, then you have an interest in selling things. The first question is not, what should I sell, but to whom should I sell what to whom? Now, I suggest selling things to people that you don't particularly like or respect. One's inclination is to serve one's community and say, I would like to serve well-made bread to beautiful people that I live near and I care about. You will die doing this and die poor. If you'd like to make some wealth, then the best thing to do is to do it vampirically, they say economically vampirically, on people that have so much of it that they just like to poop it out. And you say, well, I'll get some of that gold poop. And that's what I'm going to be teaching you today, is some sales techniques for selling things to incredibly wealthy people, things they don't need. Now you say, well, how am I going to sell them things that they don't need? And I tell you that largely they sell themselves. And that's, let me give you a little demonstration. So, hello, sir. Thank you for coming into the store. Or should I do it like, hi, Johnny. I didn't know it was you.
Oh, hello, lady.
So the person comes in the store.
I'm coming in the store. I need shaving stuff. Cream.
Oh. All right. Well, we have a few different shaving creams. We have our very, our best shaving cream, our luxury shaving cream. It's quite expensive. So let me show you this.
Well, wait a minute. What do you mean the luxury one is quite expensive?
Well, it's just that a lot of people...
I'll take 8!
And that's how it works. And you don't have to spend a lot of time going, oh, this has this in it and that. And if you do, that's a tell. So I'll give you another example.
I need some shaving cream.
All right, well, I've got the...
What's that one?
Oh, that's our smallest.
What's in it?
Don't bother. See, because that, just forget it. Because, you know, even if they look like they have money, they don't have so many resources
that they don't have to think or anything. So this person is, you kick them out of the store. You have to have a pretense, though. And you can say, I think that what you're looking for is across the street at the dollar store. And then you can have, you know, have your bag will be full. And here, I don't know if we're going to run it. So that is some techniques. Oh, my goodness, there's so many sales techniques, though, that I could show you. And always understand that everybody who's coming in your store, if it's expensive enough, have self-esteem issues. At some level, they feel weird about themselves. And if they have a title, oh my goodness, that means that's generations of strange thinking. And you can say, I would love to, I wonder if that strange thinking involves buying a golden, you know, salt spoon. Well, that's a real thing. When you try to think of something absurd, and then it's actual. It's really hard. There was a place in the mall and I worked at in high school, and it was, I don't know how I got the job. I think the mean lady who ran the place hired me, and everybody else there was very sophisticated. It was really strange. It was like a fantasy movie, you know, where it was like a shop, a high-end bath shop. But then the lady who ran it was this, like, crusty lady who stayed in the back. And then the real face of the shop were well-dressed sales clerks. And I looked clean because I was young. A lot of times youth, you know. Now I look, I go, oh, have you... I just look this way all the time. My goodness, I scrub and scrub. It's age. But then you're young and you maybe put on a tie or something or a really crisp shirt. And there you go. And they want to buy things from you, like shower curtains. And you can, and things made of lucite, which I always thought was like a plastic or something, but it's like the platinum of plastic. And people want things made out of it. And it's so funny. I remember a rabbi having a fundraiser for a Lucite Bima. And it was like, there was a, or something. There was some kind of Lucite Torah scroll holder that he had his eye on. And so he was having a fundraiser or something. I don't know why. I find myself at all sorts of social events. Oh, my goodness. I try to make connections in the community in case I need to sell things that people don't need. But I have overcome a lot of my revulsion, and I'm able to sell things to friends now. Not at that level, not at the Tupperware party level or something. You go, what? This is a strange party. You go, hey, I'm so glad y'all came. Do y'all like protein shakes? Oh, no, it's a multi-level marketing thing. Oh, I remember that was popular one time. Say, do you have friends? Yeah, then you have customers. You know, then you don't have any friends anymore. Once you convert them over, there they go. This is, only goes one way. You can't, I want my friends back. You can't, now they have been transformed. That's a nightmare. So don't ever do that. I mean, a lot of people that, it's a hard call, right? Because you think, I'd like to have a shop. I say, well, who would be the customers? My friends who like what I like, which is what? Oh, banjo and yarn, or I don't know. Bless everybody in my circle. But that's stuff like that. And you go, well, I don't know. That's good. You're putting a lot of burden on your friends there because how often are they going to need these things, really? You should get them to all write down, you know, how much money a year do you think you spend on banjo strings if I just had that? And I think that's, you're going to find like, oh, no, I need to be in a community of 10 billion people to be able to make enough money at my business. And that's not going to happen. So I think what a lot of us do, I have relatives that have been in the tourism business. Oh, my goodness. And that's the ultimate thing, because not only are they rich, but they're strangers. And it's just so much easier that way. The other thing is also tricking other species. I don't know if you've ever done that. We used to have these, they're like, I don't know if you've ever seen some of these cartoons where the animals talk. It's real and everything. And we had some zebras or zebras that would come in, and they were real snobby and everything. And that, and I didn't feel anything because I was like, these aren't, I mean, bless them, but I'm not a zebra. And there's other species also, mandrills. Oh my goodness, what a pain they can be. They're an odd bunch. We had mandrills would also come in all sorts of beautiful. I love all the creatures of the world. And if I had a mall or a store, I really would have any of them could come in. I don't mind that at all. Humans are such snobs about that. Like, no other species. Maybe dogs, if they're very, you know, obsequious and well-behaved. Anything you want, boss. That kind of thing. But any species that stands up for itself or something, you know? And it's just, oh, we're so bigoted. Like a gorilla. So it was a gorilla in the mall. Don't go in there. Why not? I mean, he's probably at the Sephora or something getting some cologne. I don't know why he's there. I thought they're vegetarians. Very territorial. He doesn't live at the mall. I don't know if that's where he's going to attack you. So we have the wrong idea about a lot of things. I think zoos do that. And who's that old horrible animal torturer? Marlon Perkins or something. Boy, I tried watching some of those shows. As if you want to see him choke out a cougar or something. Oh, that could be. That was a choke out a panther. Then, oh God, that's what he did. And he tried to took a box turtle and he tried to get a panther to eat it. I was like, what are you doing that to that poor turtle's terrified? He goes, look how scared the turtle is. Good God, man, it's like Beavis and Butthead frog baseball or something. And that's what people came up on. So I guess animals are things. And zoos, you know. So I say, let them in. You're probably not there. Hey, you're not even using the mall. And you begrudge the animals being there. I've noticed that. These abandoned malls are going, board it up, the birds will get in. You're literally not using it. Yeah, but if the birds get in, what? The possibility will revitalize it. You don't know. You haven't even given them a chance. I think let some other species in there. I see some raccoons setting up kiosks and doing like custom license plates and stuff because they've got their little hands are so dexterous. So what are you doing there? I said, oh, making and selling turquoise jewelry. Turquoise. I don't know what species of raccoon you are. All these things could happen at the animal mall. It would be beautiful. And here's a little song I wrote about it. It's all happening at the animal mall. I do believe it. I do be believe it. What we would say. Oh my goodness, though. How are you giving me sales advice? Hardy, get on with it. Well, I've got an hour to give you what I think is essentially 5 minutes of sales advice that I gave you in the beginning. And that is basically just make sure that what you're selling has snob appeal. And then don't feel the need to explain it or sell it. If you feel like you got to sell it, they start to get suspicious, you know? But if you give the attitude, like if you have to ask how much it is, that's a really creepy. What if it was every, you know, I would like some of that cheese. All right. How much are you giving me? If you have to ask the weight. Well, how much will it cost if you have to ask that? What's it taste like? If you have to ask that, then it's not for you. All right. We're worried about this bill. And remember, the minute I hand you the bill, you're obligated to pay it, even if it seems like an absurd amount. This happened with the man who sprinkled salt funny. The man who sprinkled salt funny. It feels like it's old Perry Mason episode title. But it's that really fella, I can't, Salt Bro or something, I think was his name. And Salt Baby. Something like that. And then he was making, he was sprinkling salt funny. And people go, that's amazing. He's sprinkling salt funny. And then he got a high-end restaurant in New York City. And he was like, I think steaks are sprinkle, $5,000. And that's one of those things you got to ask. I guess you go, all right, well, you know, because $5,000 maybe to a billionaire is not $5,000 to me. Like, I'm in that, you know,
you owe $5,000.
Oh, you know, do it to be or not to be, right? It becomes like, you know, is it? So, but like to others, it's like, all right, I'll write you a check right now. And my goodness, that's the thing, though, about controlling a lot of a wealth. I just want access to things. That's why I am a thief. And what I do is I'm a jewel thief, and I break in and I steal. No, I don't do that at all. Boy, what a lifestyle that would be. So I'm going to move to South Florida, and I'm just going to be like these wonderful characters in the movie who break in and steal art and treasures and things like that. But I'll tell you, some fellas did that here in Lexington, and it's finding a buyer. You really have to have that lined up before you buy, you know, steal something hot. Because I always think that about art. Because if you steal a bit of art, you've got to have somebody lined up ahead of time and maybe even get the money ahead of time. And then just do it under threat of death. Because otherwise, there is absolutely no way you're going to get away with it or get any money. So, especially if you steal something famous, it's better be going to... I don't even know. Maybe I have a lot of clients who are warlords from other planets, and so they're just I am taking this, and I say okay, that's fine, and they pay me in ore. I don't even know what it is, but apparently it's very expensive stuff. I could sell it to the government, but now I'm stuck with this ore I'm not supposed to have, and they say, how do you want to be paid? And I go, I made the mistake of going ambergris. And they go, no, that's also, think about it, also going to be hard to sell. So make sure that you get paid in something that you can then use to pay somebody. What's a good legal tender? What's something that'd be good to trade that isn't money? Just gold intrinsically doesn't do it for me. I mean, if it had accepted value and everything. But what's something that's just, and diamonds don't say, well, there's, couldn't you stare at this tiny diamond all day long if, you know, in exchange for your house? No. So it has to be something that has, you know, if we were doing a trade, it would have to have the same intrinsic value or usefulness or something. And I don't know how that would work. You know, I'll trade you. I was thinking today, because I was looking at a perfume that was as much as a guitar. And I was thinking guitar, not that I could buy either, but I was thinking, you know, guitar or perfume, are they equal? Would I trade one? Say, oh, I got my eye on that perfume you have. Yeah, I was looking at your guitar and I was thinking, you know, I could smell bad and then shred. And that's, you know, but I could smell good and then I hate guitars. I don't hate guitars, but I don't collect them. A lot of friends collect them. I've collected other things, and then I realized, hey, some of this is mental problem. And you start, you know, just, you know, buying. I'm really interested in this thing. I'm going to buy all of them. And I go, whoa, slow down. And find the subtle, enjoy the subtle things. Get into a behavior that doesn't need any equipment. And so I was trying to. And what I chose for, you don't have to do what I do, but what I chose was sloth. I thought, you know what I'm going to do? Nothing. I'm going to be indolent. No, I didn't do that. But I did learn, hey, you know that Andy Griffith episode that says, what's your hurry? I go, what's your hurry? And then I'll sit on the porch and there's a guy, a flustered, like, oh. Anyway, don't be that person. Now, for a sales technique, if you do want to be a person, say, I find to do things in character helps. If I could be somebody else, you know, when I'm being myself, I don't have a lot of confidence. Let's say I'm doing sales at a sort of high-end store. What do you recommend, Hardy? And I say, Frank Nelson. I say, if you don't know Frank Nelson, go watch some old mid-20th century television or anything. And he's still, to this day, sort of, he's dead, but he's a meme. So he's the guy who goes, yes, I'm sarcastic, that fella. And look at you. I'm not being sarcastic now. Oh, yes, I am. And, you know, condescending kind of, oh, it's lovely. And people love that. And it's really good. It's actually kind of good for sales. Because if I walk into, I don't want, you know, I want the person who works there to make me feel a little bit bad. And then I will prove them that I have worth by showing them how much I could spend. And that should be the dynamic. And all of you, let's make that, that's already normal. Let's make it even better. And so, dude, you know, you can bring that attitude to any of your sales that you do. And I think it'd be fine. You know, it'd be a creative would be do that voice, but don't be sarcastic. I don't know. People know what to make of it. So it was like Frank Nelson, but I think he's being sincere. I'm going to use sincerity as a shtick. That's something I've thought about a lot. Is, you know, what shtick? I mean, no, I'm not asking. I mean, what, we know what it is. But I mean, when you're, what's you and what's an act? Are you talking to me? I'm just talking to everybody. Yeah, because we all are self-conscious and we all are playing a part and a character. And sometimes a couple things happens when we're alone. One is that we become nobody because we realize that our character is dependent on others and that when we haven't really made a sincere us. And then sometimes when we're alone, you go, wow, you know, the one I've made, the sincere me, is just kind of chaotic and not really, is just based on a lot of things. And wow, that's interesting. Is there no you? There is a you. But, oh, my goodness, it's made of so many beautiful collage pieces. And no two collages are the same. But they do, they have the same stuff in them. For instance, let's say I'm making, everybody say, make a collage out of your albums at home. You know? And so you go through, and then every collage has whipped cream and other delights in it. Some portion of it cut up. Because of how many copies of Whipped Cream and Other Delights by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass there are. Therefore, that appears in all our beautiful collages. So I ask you, my friend, can we find in each other the cut-up piece of Herb Alpert's Whipped Cream and Other Delights? What are you talking about? Oh, if you just tuned in, it's a sales tape. They're playing a sales tape. So something happened with music. There isn't any music anymore. And now the radio station has gone over to all instructional cassettes. And they've all been digitally re-enhanced and enhanced again and then erased and digitally remastered and then AI. And that's something else. AI and I would be, I guess, kind of a Rasta version. I hope that someone hasn't done that. Oh, everything's falling apart. Why like dad puns? I to wreck everything. I think the word sabotage contains the word sabo or shoe. And my understanding is it comes from the practice of taking off your wooden shoe. Let's say you're working at the old GM plant. And you go, man, let's make it Ford. Since you're working at the Ford plant, and you go, oh, my God, Ford's a Nazi. I want to get rid of it. So you take off your wooden shoe because I'm thinking, why, you're Dutch. You just have it. You have a wooden shoe on. People used to wear wooden shoes, I think even as recently as the 60s. And you would see that. Look at a picture of Woodstock. It's also wood shoe because of the mud and everything. They have to wear the wooden shoes. So you take those and you can throw the wooden shoe Well, this is the irony. A sneaker would work if you throw it into gears, and that's the sabotage. And that's a wonderful thing. And then that direct line to the Beastie Boys. So any time that you can throw something into the system to slow down these gears that are supposed, this machinery that's supposed to make things efficient, but it's just absolutely eats us up and consumes us. Oh, these machines they're going to make life easier. Are you anti-factory and machines? No, I'm not. I eat machine food. I think there's one of the most underrated thing. I don't like a lot of processed food, but boy, that like a saltine. And I think this goes back, that machine is very old, but I can't master the kitchen, just making a saltine in the kitchen. And I wouldn't make them. I like the food enough that I could, I'd give it a go and have. But what I make is not that. And I could have all of the baking soda cracker, soda in the world. I would not have what the machine has. And that's consistency. That's great for some things. Like hammering a dolphin. Not a dolphin. Is that what it's called? What are those piers? What is the pier thing? Like the pole that's stuck away from the... Well, even on the pier. Like if you got a dock and you have the piling and you... I grew up by the water, and I remember these machines that would drive these things. I think a dolphin is a name for one of those poles that's out in the water, too, when you're hooking up boat rope. I know all these things because I'm a sailor. No, I lived by the water for a long time. I didn't pay much attention to it, but people talk. You hear things. And the sound, I'm as a kid, I'd hear of these poles being driven into the seabed. And I liked that. I thought that went on to influence the way that I make my art. And so, but no, it doesn't. I don't do that. If my music, maybe I'd say, oh, whatever. Where's that heavy bass drum?
Well, as a kid, there was the rhythm of the machine,
that kind of thing. That'd be lovely. No, it didn't endure in anything. I guess this is the moment where, you know, that I've been waiting for my whole life is just to tell you about that. But I have no other, that sound of the dock thing being driven in there. It's not much use to me. I guess I don't need it ultimately. I don't have a boat. It wasn't for me. I mean, you know, good for people who do. I don't know that I saw any good from it. Who knows? Oh, bless us. I'm going to be gone before I figure it out. Are you dying soon? Oh, not soon enough. No, I don't think so. I'm going to go on for a little while in an increasingly more confused state, not because of biology, just because I think I'm paying attention. And I feel like I just know less, and it isn't some kind of deterioration. It's my brain is expanding, and I'm right now I've become so aware that I am aware of my unawareness and know that my awareness is not awareness, even though I'm saying it is. And so that is a level of awareness or not awareness that I'm at or not at right now. And I don't even know what I'm talking about. And that's a beautiful thing. It's bliss. If I can get you to that state, people say live in the moment. You know how confused you have to be to live in the moment? How occupied, let's put it that way. You have to be so engaged. You have to be, basically, that's why people climb mountains, or they climb those rock faces, because to get the past and the future like way out of your head, you have, it's a lot of times it has to be life and death. You say, well, I need to think about right now, because if I don't, I will plummet. And so, you know, we can be engaged. There are things that, you can kind of hypnotize yourself too with music, as if you play an instrument, and sort of the past and the future, sort of if you're playing something difficult, if you're just playing something easy, then you start to get sad. You go, I'm thinking about my mom now. So you want to make sure that you're playing something so difficult that if you stop thinking about it, you'll mess up. If you're just strumming the guitar, you're doomed. Because then that is a time machine. Because just a strummed guitar can be nostalgic. You can think you can sing a Beatles song and weep at the same time because you're thinking about something sad. But say, I gotta play Paganini in front of Hitler. I don't know if that ever happened. But say, well, that's kind of, well, stressful. Just, let's make it Stalin. More likely to kill you if you play it wrong. I don't know. Maybe let's vote. No, don't vote. Let's not do anything. Oh, bless us. I thought this was a sales thing. It is. You don't think there's like an internal work that you have to do sales? How many of you ever been serious about martial arts? Put your hands up about kung fu or something. Yes, exactly. So, you know, like there's internal Tai Chi. And I remember I got a book on it one time, and there was one, it was called Swallowing the Jade Spitwad or something. And it was just getting up a lot of aerated spit in your mouth and taking a big gulp or something like that. And I thought, this is, what a wonderful practice. And I'm not sure what that's all about and everything, but I say that's probably part of hitting people, is swallowing your spit. It's got to go down at some point. So to learn to do it like that is probably important to doing some kind of kick or burr. So you know there is internal work, or just chi, controlling your chi, or I control my cha or my ti. What's that? Well, I imagine that there's a little teacup in my midsection, my center of gravity, and it's got tea in it, and I try not to spill it, and it gives me, I become very conscious of my dantian, my center of gravity there, and I think, you know what needs air? My cup of tea, and I'll breathe into it like that. I'm just making that up really now for you, because I feel like I need content. I've been online, and everything's content, 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 content. It never used to be that way. People said, I need a reason to keep someone's attention. Wait, don't go. I come from the old school, which is more like rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. The way that you keep someone's attention is by grabbing hold of their arm forcefully. And say, wait, you're going to hear all this story. That was the way they did it in the old days. That's what we called having three networks. So there was the television. Radio was a little more choice. That's funny. There was more choice on radio and less on television. How about that? That's what it was. But they would say, well, these are the ones you're going to see. Everybody has to watch these shows. Yes. And it was all, we were all brainwashed because we had all seen Bob Newhart. And so it was all, and what happened is that shared audience thing can masquerade as culture. And so, it's called pop culture. But what it is, it's trivia about stuff you'd all seen because there's not that many shows. And the human mind is curious and it must explore. And so even when it doesn't, it's not working on something useful, it's just like, well, I'm going to memorize all the episodes of my favorite show, who was on what. And we do that, and bless us, and it takes beautiful minds and everything. But then we realize, oh my goodness, the thing I think is my culture and my world is based on, it's almost like Gilligan's Island is the Shakespeare of what's going on today. It's like, I don't even know, I can't even understand the language on Gilligan's Island a lot. I know, because they're speaking in the old way of speaking English. I always thought it was funny when they treat British sitcoms as if they were speaking in Middle English or something. And I don't know that American audiences will understand a lot. And they're not speaking with... It's not It's not like they're Jodie Whittaker or something. I could understand most everybody that was on those old sitcoms and say, yeah, I know what they're saying. It's still English. I mean, granted, there are some UK accents that are very hard to understand. But there's no, I don't know any shows that's in some kind of impenetrable Scottish dialect that needs to be redone. Let's do it over here because they won't get it. And that happens over and over. And I think it happens the other way around. So, well, British people, they don't understand the American version, which is hilarious because, I mean, one of my favorite comedy shows of all time is From the Moon. And they're not even the same people that we are. And I laugh and laugh at it. So I don't think, you know, that something has to be exactly tailor-made for you. You could find the humor in it. Oh, my gosh. Look at how universal Punch and Judy is. Anybody, anywhere can look at that and be appalled and think, how is this ever entertaining? And there's not many things like that that we can all agree on. But there are some universals, aren't there? And we learn that online a lot of times when we see pictures of stuff, say, you know, there's two things that we think are funny. Tragedy and comedy. And I, you know, I know the things that make us sad now are outside of entertainment. And that's all been outsourced. And sometimes, so my family has taken over, really, where a lot of the old tragedies would have done it for me. I used to watch soap operas. Now I just have relatives. And so it's very similar. And they do the same thing. They have this, you know, the soap operas are not exaggerations a lot of times. People do get amnesia. People do change their names and join the circus or whatever. And that's reality, you know. All My Children is really the name of one of the books of the Bible. You know, it's the Genesis is really Bereshit, right? And Numbers is really translates as All My Children or something like that. And so I think that's very symbolic that these serials, what we used to call serials, I don't know why, you don't eat them or anything like that, but or soap operas, again, what's it with the products that you sell in the grocery stores? But these dramas, dramas that are serialized, wait a minute, there it is. The dramas that are serialized like that, and they had those in magazines, even in Charles M. Dickens's day, they are for the people, and they evolve, right? They keep going. They don't have an end. Like, that's the only legit kind of stories there are. There's no ending to it. It doesn't resolve. Just different characters come and go. It really is like that. And the thing that happens on, that used to happen, because soap operas were daily, right? So people get, it's a heck of a job. And then people get sick and everything. So they would have things like, you know, playing the part of Bill Monroe is Mike Sipperlis, you know, and then you just accept, like, okay, it's a different Darren. It's all right. I'll pretend I don't notice. I'll pretend I don't. Where'd the old Barney go?
Hey, Fred, right here.
And they're all doing Art Carney. Imagine Art Carney seeing that cartoon for the first time and Jackie Gleason going like, hang on a minute. Did anyone call you? Well, no one called me. You know? All right. Well, I guess they're going to do it. I would love it to be, just turn on the cartoon and there's a Hardy White cartoon. It happened in the magazine, but I'd love to have it happen on TV. Just turn it on and go, what is this? Hardy White cartoon. I wouldn't worry. I wasn't getting anything from it. That's not the point. The point's to be able to go into a bar and go, that's me on the television, like that. And, come here, buddy, have some diamonds or like that. That's where you get the money, is on that end. Or you go, you know, I met Hardy White in a bar, and he sold me this thing. What is it? It's the bag that Pappy Van Winkle comes in.
What?
It's a felt bag that they used to sell Pappy Van Winkle in.
Is there rare whiskey in it?
No, no, just the bag.
How much did he sell it to you for?
$500. So that's the kind of thing. There's a tip. And you could even make them counterfeit if you don't want to really. I don't know who's going to come after you. Probably law enforcement. But they're really busy doing other things. And a lot of times they go after one another. They're so, and that's the way to do it. It's just like gangs in New York. It's like, why the firemen are busy fighting each other, you can be putting out fires or starting them or doing whatever you want. Bless you. Oh, my goodness, I hope that you are surviving in the little nooks and crannies of the forest, hiding away from. I caught a glimpse of one of the older Jurassic Park ones. And they had one. Oh, I feel a little. Talk about having your work stolen. But my Precambrian Park idea. And they go, oh, it's not scary. I go, well, yeah, but it's like, ugh, like you're waiting. There, people are wading in the little shallow water, and they're stepping on all sorts of like, I don't even know what that is, little tiny little and you know, Octavarian Park, is that how you say it? I don't see. This is why I'm so easy to steal from, because I get it wrong, and people think I'll just correct it and then take it from him. So my Precambrian Park idea is going to be gone now too, and I don't care. I don't even care. I just want people to be happy. I don't need to benefit from it. Oh, my goodness. I benefit from it by having your well wishes. I'm not even kidding. I'm not even being sarcastic. I really would rather have your blessing and your well wishing than anything. And I'm really being totally sincere. I don't know until you've... I might have enemies, but I don't have any that are constantly getting at me, and I couldn't be happier about that. I feel like there's just so much worth value in well wishers. They're just people, even if they're not around. Just it feels good, you know. And so, I try not to be. Try to be aware of that and use it to acknowledge the struggling and suffering of others. And I think that's always a good thing. You say, well, I'm blessed, and it doesn't mean I'm have any kind of obligation or anything, but what if I could take it up a notch, you know, and bless others. And I like to think, I'm basically a selfish person probably, but there's part of me that keeps tricking myself into say, well, you know, maybe you could find a way that we all could, because I love people too, and I love my friends and family, and I love anybody, I fall in love with everybody I'm with, and I thought, oh my gosh, a person! Like I guess I'm part dog. So I just, it's a weird thing. I don't know whether I felt unloved or something at some point, but I really do just have that kind of dog attitude. Oh, yes, people disappoint me and they, you know, that kind of stuff. But by and large, I'm really excited. But also like dogs, you know, I'm simple and easily confused and turn on you and really just all about my stomach. Oh, bless you. But maybe if you recognize that about yourself, you can get out of your own way a bit and get out of the way of others some and just do less damage, which is what I'm trying to do with my sales technique. That's what I'm selling you. Oh, I'm trying to sell you the idea of loving one another, because I just find that's the world I want to live in. And so that's what I'm ultimately selling right now, and I'm tricked you into, oh, give me 8. Right, exactly. I don't know if you can, I don't know if you can afford this loving everybody.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
So even if it's a contrarian motive, maybe give it a shot. I think it's I have found not power in vulnerability, but vulnerability. And that's fine. A lot of times I've felt most of my life inferior to others or something. And I say, why? You know, they're really not treating you very differently than they do anybody else. You need to just sort of put that stuff away altogether. Not worry about respect or no respect and just be a dog. And that's when Butchie approached me. He said, maybe you'd like my Dogarian sort of it's not really a religion. It's just a service station that we go to and we talk about things. And I said, okay, I'll give it a try. And go, is it based on anything? And, he said, not really. Okay. He said, Diogenes, sort of. I go, Diogenes, the naked living in a big tub thing? One? And he said, yes. And that's not how Butchie talks. But I don't want to do an impression of, you don't want to do your friends like that. Oh my gosh. I have a video on YouTube where I'm doing impressions. Oh, this is kind of meta. I'm doing an impression of a guy doing impressions of just people he knows personally. And I don't know how popular it is as a video. I was pretty excited about it. Because it's how I feel sometimes if I watch like impressionist videos and I don't know who the celebrities are. I go, oh, that's all right, you know. So I wanted to make a video where nobody knew any of the impressions. You know, it was just like Mike from work or something. Mike from work. You guys go for a sandwich? Like that or something. And, oh, it sounds just like him. I almost want to do that as an open mic because there's a lot of people that go to open mic stand-up things that are definitely you made people at work laugh and you believe that we are all the loading dock at Walmart. And maybe that's not true. And so I thought about, you know, how much making people laugh sometimes is inside jokes or making fun of the boss or something. You know,
you fellas get back to work.
Is that how the boss talks? I wish I could do, I can't do an impression of Ken or anybody who lives in New Jersey. That's so funny. I've got family from New Jersey that I can't, maybe I just don't want to. Maybe there's a block. And maybe you could, I'd love to have lessons. I wonder if you could take that, because I'm not going to learn a foreign language, but it'd be fun to maybe learn an American dialect that I don't speak. That'd be fun, maybe. I don't know whether, is that weird?
Yeah.
Is it though?
Oh, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yes.
But why? I wonder, I mean, I'm going to learn French, go to France, speak with French people,
right?
Well, I'm going to go to Maine and speak Maine with Maine people, mainly.
All right.
But I don't know. Why would that would be? Because you're not from there. I guess accents are ways of saying I'm from this area and you may speak the same language, but you're an outsider and I distrust and hate you. I guess that's why we have accents. So say, who's that? You're definitely an outsider because I'm speaking in special code. And you'd like to think that's not what it is, but I really do think that language, most of the time accents or language are all exclusionary, not really inclusion. Because then you start, because people accuse you. You ever see how you say, hey, they moved to so-and-so, then they start talking like that. Well, yeah, isn't that the point? I thought that was the point of the language. It was something kind of a unifying thing. If somebody has to remain an outsider the entire time, did you not read Ruth? So I think that, you know, it'd be good to let people come into your community and go, you know, you should learn how to speak in the messed up, unintelligible way that we speak around here. No, that's silly. I think nobody would ever move to Philadelphia because there's that sound that nobody can do. I'm not joking, though, and I'm only attempt to do it, but you know what I'm talking about. And there's a sound in the Philadelphia accent, and I'm not lying when I say I had close relatives coming up who spoke that way. I mean, it's among the first human sounds that I ever heard was that accent, and I can't do it for my, it's just not there. Isn't that strange? And yet I could say, I'm talking to my cousin Helen to this day or something, and I go, I don't know how that's coming out of you. Strange regional sounds. Y'all going crazy on the comments now. Don't. Try to not to talk about anything that I talk about. And you're so good at that sometimes. But, because of, I love to leave things a mystery. So what did Hardy mean when he said, don't shh? Was Hardy talking about shh? Oh, let us see. Just post like poetry or something. Just that has nothing to do with anything. Because some of the, this is why, I'm not trying to tell you what to do. Do whatever you want. But it's just a serving suggestion. The same way when you buy a box of crackers, you go, well, look, you could put fish eggs on it. You could put fish eggs on it. But that's only if you like fish eggs. So what I'm saying is that, you know, feel free to not have the comment have anything to do with what I'm speaking about. And I know I don't have to tell you that. Oh, but I bless you. I'm putting my blessings on you. And I'm trying to use the radio constructively, non-constructively. What does that mean? I don't like when things have purpose. And I don't like when they're useful. And I'm anti-utilitarian in a lot of ways. And I really don't think everything should be a lesson. And I don't think everything should be instructional. And I don't think everything, I don't have to make sense all the time. Listen, every podcast you listen to, they've got to teach you something, say something. We found out about this research, right? Because if they don't, it's boring and stupid. Who wants to hear people ramble? Well, I'm telling you, it's still rambling. It's the same, you know, I've learned a great deal about the history of Frosted Flakes. Well, who cares? And I think that the best art makes you want to make art, makes you want to shut it off and do it. And I've had albums that way. You start listening to it and you're like, that's it. I'm going to go do this thing. The best paintings make me run home and paint right in the middle of cut my museum trip short. And you should do this. I would love it if you just cut, just like that, shut me off right in the middle of what I'm saying, and then just you go do it. Or if I say, maybe I put a thought in your head, say, I don't even know if Hardy remembered saying something about waxing the car, but I love to do it. I love to wax cars. I love the way you rub it on, and then it dries, and then you got to, I used to love to wax my car. I don't have a car anymore, but when I was a kid, I had a 79 Chevy Nova. And it was yellow, and it was the kind that didn't have a good engine in it. It was terrible. It wasn't fast at all. It was like, you know, in the era of saving gas. So they took like what was like a kind of a sort of a muscle car, and they cut all of its muscles off like a early Christian martyr. They flayed it. They took it, and it barely went. And it would do that a lot, and it couldn't get any gas or air. It just felt like it had some kind of breathing problem. And I loved that car. I would take such good care of it, and I would armor all everything in it. You couldn't stay in it because there was so much armor all that you'd get in the car, and then you'd slide out the other side. And it smelled like that all the time. And then I had an 8-track player in it. I had an 8-track player, and I had all these rare John Lennon albums on 8-track. I kid you not. And I was thinking, that's where to put your money. See, because, you know, I made a good investment there. So, but I had a bunch of them, and then I guess I would listen to them. and cruised down the road. I got in I put the radio in the 8-track player myself and had a little EQ and everything like that. I stereo up with the stereo, prioritized that. The car did not go forward very well, but I remember my stereo was nice. And I just would, sometimes my friend Ken and I would go get hamburgers and drive over to the municipal airport, and you could watch the planes land, and we'd eat hamburgers. And I guess listen to, maybe the radio was on or not. So I better cut it off, save gas. And that was that's a memory that I go back to a lot of times when I'm trying to test my memory. But now I think I might even made it up. You know, if you regurgitate a memory too much, you just have the regurgitation. The ambergris or the, no, is that pooped out? Probably pooped out. But you know what I mean. If you spit something else up enough, it's the spit up story. And now do you ever go back to the source memory, or you just go back to the last time you told that story? Because I sort of caught my mom doing that, like telling a story, and it was verbatim. It was a memory, but it had gotten to the point where there was nothing new added to it, but it was literally like the same sentences, the same inflections. It was very interesting. And I was, every time I have an older relative and I get to witness how their world transforms as they age, it's beautiful to me. I go, oh, this is so lovely. I'm going to just dissipate. And I've tried to do it prematurely on the radio. What are you talking about? Exactly. Just get it all out there and then, you know, just become mist or something. I'm mist for you already. I don't exist really as a human being to most people. I'm a disembodied voice on the radio. And one that you could be kind or cruel to. And that's the wonderful thing. So you listen to somebody talk, say, I hate that guy. I love that guy.
I hate him.
I love
him. Hate and would hurt.
All right. I like and would not hurt, but would not help. So, but people have all sorts of feelings for you, have never met you. And that's the wonderful thing about being a human and also a character. And it's true for me in extreme, but it's also true for you. You know, you are perceived in ways, and you're not responsible for it. People see you in all sorts of ways, bless you. Oh, and you can see yourself in any way you want, though. So pick a good one. That's what I've tried to do. Say, you know what? I've grown tired of not being a loyal companion to myself. And at the very least, it doesn't mean you have to self-aggrandize. It doesn't mean, it just start by, if you get off your back and be like a neutral sort of companion. Like you're walking in the woods with another animal and you're not sure if they're on their side or not because you don't really speak the same language, but you're hanging out. And like so far, you and the badger, your goals are aligned. And that should be maybe that should be your relationship to yourself. Is it your little badger friend who walks beside you? And maybe you could look, maybe if you look for food together, it'd be better. And again, if you're thinking of working at the mall, go to the highest end. Apps always gravitate toward the luxury thing, even though it's snobbery. Make sure it's the snobbier, the better. And then be like that and know more about the product than the customer always. And if the customer does know more about the product, tell them they're wrong. And all sorts of, those are some tips I have. Oh, with some of the things. Someone did that with me with cheese, and I got very mad because I used to work in a cheese store. And then I visited France and had some cheese experiences. And so I had a fella in a cheese shop. This is no Monty Python thing. Arguing with me. We had a blue cheese argument. And it was really, I started getting a little ticked off because he was questioning my knowledge of the thing. He was trying to cheese light me or something. And I was having none of it. Oh, my goodness. So know your product. Deal with clientele that are tourists and wealthy. Hopefully from another planet, it's even easier. There's people that aren't tourists. So Jamaica, they have an expression, dry land tourist. And it just means a kind of a person that puts on airs, acts like they've traveled to places they haven't, maybe even speaks with an accent or something like that, like super pretentious. And they're a great customer base. So, maybe try for that. Sometimes they'll try to nickel and dime you. Don't let them. Go for the ones that are blustery. Make them write the big checks. These are also my real estate tips. Perhaps this isn't the house for you.
I'll take three.
I used to sell 4 or 5 houses at a time with that technique. I don't know. Maybe you can't afford this palatial house. It's just simple. It's reverse psychology. But I've reversed it and then flipped it again. And what that does, it's like folded steel. Like when you're making a samurai sword. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WMFU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope. Try it again. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City. And online at WFMU.org worldwide. Freeform radio, the way is Shemp. Oh, I love you so much. Thank you for joining me, and I will see you again next week.
Thank you.